This episode of the Infamous Podcast is brought to you by the Flying Pork Apparel Company.
The Flying Pork Apparel Company is an awfully long name to fit into a 15-second ad. We're most likely going to have to cut it short, but our designer tees and customer services are like way long on quality. Visit flyingporkapparel.com and shirt yourself, folks. Thank you.
Hey, welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. This is Brian.
Hey, Johnny.
Hey, Johnny. That's funny.
Hey, this is Johnny.
This is episode 174, and we're going back to the underrated sci-fi well.
And would this be fantasy? This would be fantasy.
So, okay, I have it on here. I want to discuss this. But we're going to talk about Willow.
Yeah.
And, okay, so the team at sciencefiction.com has, like, been over this ad nauseum for the last almost decade at this point, in our
science
group.
Science fiction what?
Exactly. Is fantasy science fiction?
It's fantasy.
Is it an offshoot of science fiction? Is it all the same? Is it fantasy?
It's fantasy.
Okay. So I
don't. Lord of the Rings is fantasy. There is no science to it.
Sure. Okay.
Willow is fantasy.
Isn't it magic kind of science?
Magic is what science, you know. No, magic isn't science.
Because in Asgard, magic and science are the same thing, right?
That's different. No, the Asgard, like, in Marvel Cinematic Universe would be aliens.
Yeah.
And the Asgard in the Marvel comic books is actually Asgard, as in they're the Norwegian gods.
Yep. So no, and honestly, I'm just kind of like, I'm asking because it's like, what do you guys think?
It's fantasy.
Like, is it? But do
and
they cross
here
over
on?
Yeah,
IMDb listed as action adventure drama.
Ooh, fantastic!
Action and adventure, I would agree.
All right, so yeah, we are talking about the 1988 American high fantasy film directed by Ron Howard.
Now who put high fantasy? What the hell?
Wikipedia did.
Oh, that's just somebody. What is high fantasy?
I don't know, but I wanted
to. Do you have to be high to watch this movie?
I left it in there for a reason. And it was produced.
It's just called copy and paste. Yeah. That's all it is.
Well, no. I when I was reading it, I was like, what the hell is high fantasy? It was produced, and the story is by George Lucas, and it stars Warwick Davis, Val Kilmer, Joanne Whaley, Jean Marsh, and Billy Barty, among others. Mm-hmm. So I watched this last night before recording.
Mm-hmm.
It took me like an hour to find the Blu-ray. Which I knew I had.
You have all your books? Like, do you not have them organized?
They were organized at one point. I don't think they are anymore. As more things came in and ran out of space in books, sort of thing. I need to go back through them all. Anyway, I will say I'm really sad I haven't watched this movie in 10 years. Like,
This movie will be mentioned on if 1988 pops up.
Oh yeah, definitely. Oh, for sure.
Well, this is one I've watched at least once a year, maybe twice a year.
So it holds up surprisingly well for what it is, and for what the critical reception for this movie was.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at the aggregate score on Rotten Tomatoes from the reviewers, it's got a 50%, which I think is totally unfounded.
It's Rotten Tomatoes.
It is. Well, but I mean, it's just, you know what it is?
As you've explained, that's an aggregate.
It is, yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
I will say it had a budget of $35 million.
Yeah.
So considering what they did with $35 million, even back in 1988, like, this movie is beautiful.
That's $35 million in 1988 money, kids.
But I mean, that doesn't equal $250 million now.
But how do they do that comparison?
I don't know.
Do they even do that comparison? Like,
well, no, I'm just talking about the budget. I'm not talking about the box office.
The box office was terrible.
It's at $57.3 million.
They weren't happy with the box
this
office.
This movie made all of its money on home video.
Yeah.
This is one of the first movies that really did really well on home video, actually.
I think I had it on home video, but I remember seeing it in a theater.
Yeah, I saw this one in the theater. I like this. Yeah, it. One thing is, it's 126 minutes long. It does not feel like it's a 2 hour and 6 minute movie.
I disagree with that. That opening is way too long.
You think?
Yeah, I was complaining about that last night.
Yeah.
The opening with Laura Dannon and all that.
Oh, when they find her? Oh.
No, not when they find her. When the journey to the new Lynn Village.
Okay,
I'll
get on board with that.
Yeah, it's like if it didn't have that James Horner Awesome soundtrack backing it up, that would have been like, is this over yet? Is this like going to be the whole movie?
Is this Lord of the Rings?
Well, it's just that a lot of like just showing her taking care of the baby and the baby aging, and I'm like, it's taking a long time to get to wherever you're going.
Yeah, that's true. So. George Lucas originally titled this Munchkins. Did you
like
know that?
Like a secret title or?
No, I mean, that's when he came up for the idea for the film, he originally titled it Munchkins in 1972.
Oh, well.
I think the other interesting thing is during production on Return of the Jedi, he approached Warwick Davis and said, hey, do you want to play Willow Ofgood?
Yeah, and he was only like 12.
Yeah.
He wasn't 12, but he was young.
He was.
Well, when they filmed the movie, he was 17.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. The kids that play his kids in that movie are only like 5 years younger than him.
I also think it's funny that he based certain characters off of film critics. Did you read that part?
No.
So General Kale.
Yeah, General Kale.
Played by Pat Roach. Is based on film critic Pauline Kael. Okay. And the fact was not lost on Kael when she printed a review. She referred to General Kael as an homage to moi.
Mm-hmm.
And then the two-headed dragon, Iborsk, is named after Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert. Ugh, can't read or talk today. Which is pretty funny. I kind of wish he would have carried more of that.
I'm like, which one's head did he blow off?
Yeah. Who gave him the thumbs up or down?
Yeah.
I mean, that was some of the reception there. So it's like we were talking. This movie made its money definitely in the home video. It's, I think, cult status.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, would you put this up there as like a mainstream classic?
Probably more mainstream classic than that.
Than cult. But it's underrated at the same time.
I would say it's underrated, but it's not like a cult movie. Like, you know, people aren't reenacting.
It's not like Mallrats. Like, or...
No, you know. I would go... Like, cult for me is like Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, okay.
Repo Man.
Sure.
Is cult. Alien could be considered a cult movie in a way. You know, Buckaroo Banzai is a cult movie.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So
this one, not really.
Okay.
This is like a kid's movie that every kid should see.
I'm trying to get her to watch it, and she's not a kid anymore. She's like, I don't want to watch it.
She's not a kid anymore.
But it's like, I'm like, it's got magic and wands. It's right up your alley.
Yeah.
you're all about Harry Potter right now. Watch the movie and enjoy it. No, I know.
Neither the two shall ever meet. The only meeting of Harry Potter in this movie is that Warwick Davis is in both of them.
Right. I tried to tell her that, but she didn't listen.
See, you're throwing out trivia. Let's throw out some of the weird trivia.
Yeah, let's do that.
So the Devil Dogs were actually Rottweilers with rubber masks and suits on.
Okay. That's creepy.
The large group of pigs outside the castle toward the end of the movie.
Yeah.
They continuously tried to mate. Buckets of cold water were used to separate them.
Wow, that's really funny.
And Val Kilmer was there too.
Ouch.
No, it says in here, I only said that because the next trivia thing said Val Kilmer ad-libbed much of his dialogue.
That actually makes sense watching it. Yeah. Old Mad Mardigan there.
Warwick Davis's future father-in-law and wife appear as Newland villagers.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. It was I did like some of the stuff on the trivia I know just from over the years. That was the largest casting call for little people.
Yeah.
Ever.
Oh.
Like ever. Up until that point.
Yeah.
And that, so, you know, that's pretty cool.
That is cool.
Ron Howard directed it.
Yep.
It's probably one of Ron Howard's best movies. Yeah.
So give me your top three Ron Howard movies.
Top three? Apollo 13, this, and Cocoon.
Ooh. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, he got this because of Cocoon.
Right.
Because George Lucas was on set.
Right, because ILM did a lot of the stuff for Cocoon also.
Yep. I got to go Backdraft because I love it.
Yeah.
This, and this is in no particular order. And
yeah, there's no particular order.
I really am fond of Rush.
Okay.
The one he did with Chris Hemsworth and Baron Zemo.
I just went with the ones that I've watched the most.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, this, I don't know, man.
And tomorrow could be different.
Yeah. The cinematography in this was really, really good. And that's Adrian Biddle.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just these beautiful, like, sweeping shots of a, you know, medieval countryside. I didn't see where they filmed. That wasn't in my notes, but it's such a cool, like, just scenery that they have. It's kind of almost like, it seemed like they shot similarly to where The Princess Bride was shot or something like that. Like
California.
Was it California? Okay.
And New Zealand.
Okay.
So
Lord of the Rings.
Wales. Yeah. Wales, New Zealand, England, California.
Okay. I'm going to say real quick, if this movie doesn't happen, Lord of the Rings, the way Peter Jackson does it, doesn't get made.
True.
Just knock that out right now.
Yeah. Yeah, they shot out
all over the place.
Well, like the mountain and lake scenes was New Zealand.
Yeah.
The kayak scene where they went across the lake to get Fen Razel was New Zealand.
Okay.
They shot on a highway. In California.
That's funny.
And then like Knockmar Castle and like a lot of the stuff you would think was England is England. The cart chase, Newland Village, Knockmar Castle.
Cool.
And then the studio, because they shot on set. They shot on a set a lot.
Yeah. Very cool.
So here's another little trivia thing that you probably didn't see. General Kale is played by Patrick Roach.
Right.
Patrick Roach is in all three Indiana Jones movies and plays a different character in each one.
That's really cool.
He's the ball-headed guy that fights him by the plane that gets cut up.
Oh.
He's the guy down in the tunnels that's beating the kids that Indiana Jones fights and eventually gets pulled into the machine.
Okay.
And he's a German officer in Last Crusade that comes in when Indy and his dad are in the room.
Ah.
And asks, where is the book?
Oh, yeah. That's funny.
Yep.
That's really cool.
He was a stunt guy.
Yeah.
And, like, this was just one of those things where, you know, he was the right size for the character and had the right attitude for the character.
I love that skull mask.
Yeah, the skull mask.
It's so cool. I remember being a kid and being afraid of that.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of freaked me out a little bit. Another interesting thing is Joe Johnston was one of the producers on this.
Well, Joe Johnston worked at ILM.
Right, but... So. I did not realize
he produced a few of the movies that weren't Star Wars.
Yeah,
that were coming through ILM because he did a lot of the effect work back then, and I mean the dude created Boba Fett. So
yeah,
but like he did a lot of the effects, and you know I think he did some of the director photography stuff for some of these movies and that. But
I mean like he directed Honey I Shrunk the Kid, The Rocketeer, obviously, Pagemaster. He designed the Iron Giant. So, directed Jurassic Park 3, Hidalgo, something called Captain America, the First Avenger. I don't know if you ever seen
that Wolfman.
Yep, the Wolfman. Is that the one with Jack Nicholas?
No, the Wolfman's Benicio Del Toro. It's actually remake. Right.
Yeah.
So. Except with the twist, the terrible twist at the end. The
twist. He's got an upcoming The Chronicles of Narnia and The Silver Chair.
Yeah.
Interesting. I thought they were done with that.
New studio.
Yeah.
And that.
So
Val Kilmer and Joanne Whalley.
Yeah.
Met on the set.
Yep.
This is a met on the set movie.
Yep.
And that, they got married. Married.
Have, what, three? Two kids.
Two kids, I think. No longer married, but.
No.
She was kind of like an unknown when she got cast in this movie. I think she had been in, she'd been in a lot of English productions, but like being an American actress, she was not. So that was, this was a good foot in the door for her. Jean Marsh had been on a lot of Doctor Who stuff.
Yeah.
And that, so people, you know, sci-fi fans knew who she was.
She was known. Yeah. They were married from 1988 to 1996.
Oh, okay.
So.
And Billy Barty.
Yeah,
you know,
Billy Barty. She had a, what was she? I was going through her stuff, and she was in something that surprised me recently. Where'd it go? God, she has a huge. Oh, she's Sister Maggie in Daredevil, season 3.
Oh, I haven't watched.
Yeah, so I mean that's not spoiler.
I would have recognized her, but I probably would have recognized her.
But no, that it was like, oh yeah, duh. And I knew that name had popped back up in my my mind's eye for a reason. Let's just talk about Val Kilmer for a second.
Val Kilmer was awesome in this movie.
Crazy awesome in this movie. And he has abs, which is funny when you think about Val Kilmer today.
Did he really? Like, he didn't seem... He seemed like he had packed on a little bit of weight for this movie.
Like, he was... Like, he wasn't, he was bulky. He was
bulky, but he didn't look like he was like that cut.
Yeah, he definitely was. He had some cut to him.
But he's not like naked through most of the movie.
I mean, he's running around in those.
Dressed as a woman a lot of the movie.
That was really funny. I love the manic nature of Mad Mardigan.
Well, that's the thing is like him ad-libbing. It's like, it pretty much was just do what you want.
Stream of thought.
Yeah.
So just say something. Say something ridiculous. Very impressed by his swordplay.
Yeah,
like the way
he was trained really well.
Yeah, whoever helped him with that,
was the guy who did all the lightsaber training.
Yeah, with the stunt coordinators and stuff like that. All of the sword fights were really good in this. I even thought Warwick did a good job with the sting-esque dagger that he was wielding there for a little bit. What did you think of the story overall?
I mean, I think it's like one of the better like fantasy stories for an original type story, because I mean, you know, George Lucas talks about how Star Wars is based off of, you know, Seven Samurai and other things, and that, and it's like you see elements of Lord of the Rings in here.
Yeah,
you see elements of other fantasy books, Wizard of Oz and that
type of stuff
in here. But I mean, on a whole, he had a good solid idea of a story that, you know, they could work off of.
Right.
And that wasn't like, oh, that's, you know, Bav Morda's The Wicked Witch. Mm-hmm. There's elements of The Wicked Witch in there, but it's Jean Marsh, like, really went over the top and made it work.
She was great as the villain in this one. You know, you really bought her, like, wanting to send the baby to, you know, the underverse.
Yeah.
Wherever she was trying to send her.
Wherever she was going
to
send it.
But...
Well, and you got that feeling, like, especially the few scenes where she and Saoirse are interacting, where she was good at one point.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know she was good at one point, and just something made her go terribly on the wrong side.
It's kind of like the whole Snow White and the evil stepmother, or not, was it her stepmother?
The Evil Queen.
The Evil Queen, yeah. With, you know, who's the fairest of them all sort of thing.
Just something pushed her.
Yeah, like... This is a baby that's going to come and, you know, take your daughter away from you because she's going to betray you. And then, you know, you're going to lose everything because this little baby with a birthmark on her arm. Very interesting to round up all the pregnant ladies in the kingdom. That's one way to do it, right?
I mean, yeah.
Yet the baby still slipped through her grasp.
Yeah, that's the perfect setup of any, you know, fantasy story. So somehow she still made it through.
Yep.
Kenny Baker's in this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. He plays as one of the new musicians.
I thought the baby was a fantastic actress. She did great work. crying when she needed to cry.
They shot her perfectly, like all the reactions and the way the editors of the movie did a really good job.
She had great little baby eyebrows, right? Like when she was like surprised or whatever, like they would just kind of go up, like ah. What are you looking up?
Oh, I was just reading some of the. I was looking to see if they actually had who was the sword master.
Oh. I mean, I'm sure that's like a deep cut in the IMDb full credits.
Oh, I'm sure, probably.
We can find that and add it to the show notes. Yeah, I think one of the other really cool things about this is the
twins that played Baby Allure never acted again.
No?
Yeah.
I mean, why would they? They that was their peak.
Right.
It was never going to get any better than being the infant princess that the prophecy said would bring about the queen's downfall. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's I don't know, man. There's something about this movie where I don't really understand why it didn't do what it did. They were hoping it would make as much as
well. There's E.T. a good point in here,
but it came out like its early competition was Crocodile Dundee 2, Big, and Rambo 3.
Well,
like. You know, those are all three pretty big movies.
Well, especially like Crocodile Dundee, the original one did so well that people knew the second one was going to.
Yeah.
And it did. It did as well as the first one. There's one thing in the trivia on IMDb that says various major film studios turned down the chance to distribute and co-finance it with Lucasfilm because they believe the fantasy genre was unsuccessful. This was largely due to films such as Dragon Slayer that was released in 81, Kroll in 83, Legend in 85 and Labyrinth in 86.
Well, they're not wrong.
They're all, you know, in that that thing, that underrated thing that you. I mean the most underrated of all those movies is probably Dragon Slayer.
Yeah, Kroll.
No, I mean. No,
I know. I'm kidding.
I mean,
I
like,
agree with you.
Legend is well known because Tom Cruise is in it. Labyrinth because of Bowie.
Mm-hmm.
And Kroll. You know, it's just a known movie. But like Dragon Slayer, that's probably the least watched of all those movies.
Yeah.
Because that was an English movie. I mean, that was everybody in that movie was English. I don't remember any Americans being in that movie.
No, it was a foreign film. Yeah. So, I mean, like we were talking about before, this movie wasn't a financial. It wasn't what they thought it was going to be at the box office. And it wasn't a flop because it made a profit. It did strong in the international markets, and then it did great in home video, and it's at television sales.
A lot of the 80s movies made their money in home videos at that point. People weren't going to movies as much when the home video thing happened.
Yeah, with the whole...
And I think that, you know, this movie probably had reviews going, this isn't Star Wars.
Probably, yeah. So, Opie Cunningham, you know, or whatever they used to call it, like, you know, Ron Howard.
Ron Howard.
Because he was still new to this. Interestingly enough, it had a couple spinoff things. It had a board game that was released in 1988 by Tor Books. Had a couple of video games from Capcom on the Amiga, Atari, and the Commodore 64. As well as Capcom did two games in 1989 based on the film for the NES.
Really, you have to say what movies didn't have board games and video games in the 80s.
Yeah. It also had three novels. Shadow Moon in 1995, Shadow Dawn in 1996, and Shadow Star in 2000.
Did that one actually get released?
In 2000.
Okay.
So,
not that good.
It's got the Indicia number on Wikipedia if you guys want to look it up. But
the first one wasn't that good.
No,
I read the first book.
All right. What are they about?
Something dark has started taking over the land again, and Elora Danan is not who she was made out to be.
Oh, the prophecy was wrong.
The prophecy wasn't wrong. She just doesn't want to be what she's supposed to be. Willow disappeared. Yeah. It was Chris Claremont, so it was written like an X-Men.
Yeah.
X-Men book with the like at first you're like, does this really take place in the same world as Willow? Because, like, this doesn't seem anything like Willow.
This sounds an awful lot like Ileana Rasputin.
Like, if you were going to do these books if I was George Lucas and I was like, you know, my name's going to go on this book too, because his name's on the books.
Right.
I would have got Wayland Drew to write them, the one who wrote the movie novelization, because he had a grasp of the story.
He understood.
And I think it would have, like, you know, it was just a money grab is pretty much what it was.
That's too bad.
That's what it felt like. So, I don't know. I read the first one and was not impressed and never picked up any of the other ones. Didn't even know the third one got released.
Fair enough. I mean, the third one was 4 years after the second one, where the first and second came out a year apart.
That is Chris Claremont.
Totally forgot that Kevin Pollak was Root. The little imp guys. Completely. Or the brownies. Totally forgot about that.
Rick Overton also.
Yep. Made me laugh. They still made me laugh.
Yeah.
You know, I always like that little, like, the tough guy, like, the tough guy little guys.
Right, yeah.
Like, Steve Coogan and Owen Wilson in Night at the Museum.
Yeah, that's kind of, like, where you think they got that idea.
They got that idea from these two.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of what else.
Well, like, this movie is not really like one where it's like you're like you say that it's underrated, but it's like I don't know a person who has never not seen this movie, but I've never like gone up to people and been like, hey, have you seen Willow?
How about everybody tweet at Johnny Podorf if you haven't seen Willow and let him know, and
you're all a bunch of pecs.
Yeah, peck was an interesting derogatory term.
Yeah.
For the little people.
Yeah.
So.
They weren't liked in this world.
No.
I don't know why. That'd be something more that I would say delve into the history of the world.
Yeah, like why? Why were the
things that were disappointing in this movie are the things you find out about after you start reading trivia and all that.
Right.
Was the cutscene with the monster in the lake.
Uh-huh.
Would have been cool to see. And the end where it shows Tirazlin brought back to its full strength.
Yeah.
Sorcia's father freed from his crystal prison. The people of Tirazlin freed. Like, you're showing the effects of what Bav Morta had done to the world were being reversed.
Right.
And that. So.
But they didn't show any.
They didn't show any. They cut that. Like, like they could have cut 5 minutes off the beginning of the movie and put.
Well, apparently there was much more of her dad in there.
Yeah, there was supposed to be a scene where when they're in the in Tirazlin fighting and she's watching Mad Mardigan go to work on everybody, and you know, she's fighting people at the same time that she runs into her father, who she knew, and he tries to get out.
Yeah.
And that kind of convinces her that what her mother's doing is wrong.
Yeah.
And then instead of it being she fell in love with Mad Mardigan.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well,
which,
you know,
is okay for a fantasy movie anyways, because there has to be a little bit of romance in it.
And she's a princess and he's the swashbuckling knight type character.
That might have been a prince at some point, because when
I don't know. Yogurt didn't tell us.
Yogurt. No, it was that there's that interaction with him and Arik.
Yeah.
His friend.
Yeah.
Where He says you made a choice. Mm-hmm. That's why you're where you are now, and it involves something with a princess in another land or something. So it's like, you know, there's a little bit of backstory there they didn't put in with that. The guy who plays Arik, played what? Ron Howard's older brother on Happy Days.
Yeah,
yeah, Chet. Gavin O'Hurley.
Is it Chet or Chip?
Chet.
Chet. That's right.
He was one of the two.
Yeah,
but he was the first one.
Yeah,
and he's also his father played Grig in The Last Starfighter.
Oh, I didn't
know. The old man from RoboCop.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's his father. Their family had a long
nice
running
little
history.
Hollywood Hollywood 80s.
But yeah,
royalty.
I think that was kind of cool. Like, I don't know if Ron Howard intentionally did that or not, but like,
I don't know.
You know,
I mean,
he cast him as Mad Mardigan's friend.
Yeah. I did like their relationship. Although I will say his death scene, spoiler.
Yeah.
Kind of hokey. Like he's like avenge me or whatever he's
saying.
But then when
he
dies, he flops back.
He flops,
like, yeah,
flops
it's like, are you a fish? What's going on here, man?
It was that last death rattle.
Yeah, it was literally, but it wasn't even a rattle though. It was like a death shake backwards. Like, I don't know. It was weird.
This is a cool movie, and the fact that you get to see like Willow being a loving father,
yeah,
and a loving husband, mm-hmm. not wanting to go do this.
No,
but,
he was very reluctant. You know,
felt that he had to. Felt that it was the right thing to do, and you know, it was nice that, you know, his wife is like very supportive to him. In the sense that she's like, I don't want you to go, but I know you have to.
Yeah. And when
even his friends and all that went with him, like to the crossroads, right. at least were like, you know, very like supportive, but hesitant. They yeah. were afraid of the world.
They were. Well, and they, rightfully
and
so.
And the world, I mean, the didn't world, like that.
No, the world was awful.
Out of the
them.
Way, Peck.
But when Aldwyn sends him off.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
The High Aldwyn.
Yeah. And he's like, just go find the first, what did they call regular humans? I don't have it written down.
I don't remember.
Anyway, but he's like, just go find
Dakinis,
a human.
Aren't they?
Yeah, Dakinis.
Yeah.
Just find the first Dakini you find and give the baby to it.
Yeah.
It's like what? Just, like,
is that really what we want to do?
Is that the best like option? Like what happens if they run into Kale or
yeah.
the queen?
Yeah.
You know? Like, here you
the
go.
High Aldwyn knew that that wasn't.
I know he
the
knew,
High but. Aldwyn knew who they were going to yeah. run into, and that he was the greatest knight in the world.
Yeah,
you know, because he was. He told everybody he was, and then he showed it. I mean,
yeah. he backed it
know?
Up for
yeah.
sure. I liked when he was fighting with the broken sword and the other sword. Like, you know, he was doing the two handed.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
the one was broken. Do you see if they make? So they make Lord of the Rings 20 years before they do, right? Can you see Val Kilmer as like Aragorn?
No.
No?
No, he'd be Boromir.
You think?
I think he would have been either okay. Faramir or Boromir.
Well, I could definitely see him as Faramir
yeah.
for sure. But yeah,
he wouldn't have been at that point, but if you were casting little people,
yeah.
then I could have seen, you know, all of these actors.
Yeah.
Warwick Davis would have definitely been in this movie. And, you know, Phil Fondacaro
yep.
and all of them would have been in this movie.
Yep.
And that's kind of the thing that's the stigma still about Lord of the Rings is that they didn't cast little people.
No, they just sized them down in the computer room later on.
Right, yeah.
Or sized them up as, you know,
well, yeah, that's the thing. Is like, you know, it was just that one little bit of stigmata for them.
Yeah. I don't know. I kept thinking about Lord of the Rings while I was
watching
this.
It makes sense because this one feels very close to the heart
yeah.
of what the fantasy of Lord of the Rings is, you know. This is closer to that fantasy than it is like Chronicles of Narnia.
Sure.
Like, you know, actually the books, mm-hmm. not the movies
right.
and that.
Like, I think though, even if you go back and you look at Fellowship of the Rings,
yeah,
right, or Fellowship of the Ring, like there's a lot of that is reminiscent of Willow.
Yeah,
and you know, obviously George Lucas
borrowed
from the book, but Peter Jackson definitely borrowed some of the look and feel of Willow.
Well, I mean, New Zealand.
Yeah, well.
That, and I mean, that's the thing, is that could have been some of the inspiration for him
yeah.
to do it in his homeland, was just the fact that, you know, Willow looked good.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the lake and all that looks like Mordorish yeah. type, you know, lands and all that. And I mean, anybody could have taken Lord of the Rings and went, we're going to shoot it in England.
Right.
We're going to
shoot it in some mountain range
England,
in America.
England in the 80s compared to England now was easier to shoot fantasy mm-hmm. movies than I think it is now.
Yeah.
I mean, there is still a beautiful countryside
right.
in England, but
or you go
there,
to Scotland.
There's areas that have,
yeah.
you know, that they've shot movies that are now like
iconic.
Where people live.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. There's
that's
that.
That's true too.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? Oh, it had a little like, I don't know, like he reminded me of, the Faceless Man. I'm having a brain fart from
the Faceless Man. From Game of Thrones?
From Game of Thrones. When he's in the cage and everything, you know, it's like, let me go.
Oh, Matt Mardigan?
Yeah, when Matt Mardigan's
yeah.
like, you know, and he's like, here, let me out and I'll help you. I'll take the baby. I won't eat it, I promise. Like, that kind of reminded me of that scene with Jock and Hagar.
Yeah.
And Biter and the other guy from Game of Thrones. But yeah, I mean, I feel like this movie doesn't get the credit for the look and feel of modern fantasy that they kind of set forward. Because like you look at like a movie like Excalibur, which you have on the list for underrated movies.
The 81 Excalibur. Yeah.
Like this looks like a different fantasy world than Excalibur does.
Yeah. And I mean, because this is supposed to be a fantasy world where Excalibur's based in a real situation. Sure. Like this happened in England back in the day.
But I mean, but like, you know, we can both agree that like the Arthurian legend still delves into fantasy with you know, the Sword and the Stone, the Lady of the Lake.
Anything that involves a little bit of magic.
Yeah. So, I think one of the things I enjoyed the most, though, was Warwick Davis throughout the entire movie. And when he's like, I'm a great sorcerer. And really, he just had that one disappearing pig trick.
Yeah. Which was his greatest trick ever.
And it worked. And it was awesome. And it fooled the queen for sure.
Yeah, because he even, like, you know, she didn't believe him. You know, I'm a great magician. I will beat you.
Yeah.
At your own game, and he literally beats her at her own game. That's kind of like, I mean, you can pick apart any movie and say that that's inspired by other movies.
Right, right.
But at the end of The Princess and the Frog, when Facilier is pulled in by the shadow beast, that's what happens to her at the end of this movie. She had made a deal with whatever. Whatever was in the Underverse or whatever.
Yeah.
And
we know it's not called the Underverse, by the way.
They never said but you knew she had made a deal with something because that's how she got her power.
Right.
And when she didn't fulfill her part of the prophecy and kill the baby, they took her.
Yeah.
That's what is happening to her at the end of this movie. It's not that she's like defeated and she just dies. She's literally being dragged into hell. At the end of this movie. And that's kind of where the shadow
Devil's owed his due.
Yeah. And that's the thing with the shadow books is that whatever that shadow power is, is coming back.
You haven't been watching South Park, have you?
Nah.
So there was this past season, you know, Man Bear Pig?
I've heard.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this past season, Man Bear Pig returned and was like wreaking havoc on South Park. And it turned out that Man Bear Pig is a demon from hell that Stan's grandpa and his friends summoned forth to get free stuff, but then they had no intention of repaying him.
Right.
So he came through and was like killing, wreaking havoc on South Park, beat the devil up, almost killed the devil. Like that's how powerful Man Bear Pig is, because they conjured Satan to come beat it.
Sure.
And then it kicked the crap out of Satan. So like I was thinking about that as like, you know, she had her deal and and she reneged. Sauron. Well, didn't renege, but Sauron.
Yeah, she made a deal with Sauron through the
through
the Underverse internet. I'm making up my own story now.
So okay, so we're
mine's better than Shadow Moon.
So let's cross this over with Lord of the Rings a little bit. Chronicles of Riddick. That's like the future version. Like way in the future.
Oh, like the Furians or, you know, offshoots of something.
Maybe Matt Mardigan was a Furian.
Ooh.
There you go. There we go.
Why did you pick Riddick, though?
The Chronicles of Riddick.
Oh, you're doing like...
Because the Underverse Come, like, you know, one.
No, that's fair. Yeah.
Because I know you want to put that last Riddick on this underrated sci-fi list, but you're going to have to convince me of that because I hate that movie.
Did I put it on the list?
I think it's on the list. You had talked about it. But
I put Chronicles. Anyway. I put Pitch Black on there.
Is Pitch Black underrated?
Yes.
I mean, that movie's badass.
But people have never seen it.
Okay. We'll talk about that on another podcast.
I'm pretty sure, like, you know, people aren't like, hey, have you seen Pitch Black? That's an awesome movie.
I seem to remember when that came out, people were like, you got to go see this movie.
I did not have anybody tell me that. I didn't see it until it came out on DVD.
I saw it in the theater.
Yeah.
So, okay. Here nor there. But no, I mean, like, you could, like, really, like, tie this into, like, a bunch of different, like, IPs currently. And it would be fun to do.
That time General Kale fought Indiana Jones.
Yeah. And then Indiana
and
Jones.
Why does
found...
General Kale look like Darth Vader in a mystical, magical world?
And Indiana Jones found
does he
Han
not?
Solo.
Does General Kale not look like he would be a Darth Vader? Yeah, like totally
like proto Jedi Sith.
Like if I went to Lucasfilm, if like for some reason I was invited or you know whatever was at Lucasfilm, I wouldn't go. Let me see the original Darth Vader mask. I'd be like, let me see the original General Kale mask because I want to see that thing up
that
close.
That thing is cool.
Yeah, that whole suit was like, it did. It looked like a Darth Vader, medieval Darth Vader type suit.
It's got the whole Lord of Bones
and his
from
beard,
Game of
like his
right.
beard stuck
like
out
Bones
of the bottom,
of
and it's
Thrones.
Like, come on,
and bright like the beard game. In this movie was
well,
super
and he
strong,
just like
so.
he just his voice like when he would have the mask on, like he had to. It sounded like he had to scream to get what he was saying out, and it like made it even more intimidating.
Although it was a little weird when every once in a while he'd go. I'm kidding.
David Prowse was like, well, "That was supposed to be my role.
Those were my lines." You know he's got a dartboard with James Earl Jones' face on it, right? Like, you stole my thunder.
All Prowse?
Dunk, dunk, dunk.
Nah.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm kidding. Yeah. No,
well,
they
people
all have...
get a kick out of that, seeing him without the helmet on.
Yeah.
Like, that's a picture that everybody's like, that's the coolest picture ever.
Yeah.
And that him without the helmet on.
No, he has a
Hayden. I like when people are like, still go, you know that James Earl Jones played the voice of Darth Vader. It's like, yeah, okay.
Did he?
Yeah, really?
Oh, no.
I thought it was the guy who played Mufasa.
Weird.
Oh, wait. It was the same guy.
That was the Admiral from the Tom Clancy movies.
Greer.
Couldn't remember. I had a brain fart. It's been a long day. If you haven't seen this movie and you're listening to us
this
right
is just
now,
a fun movie to
it's
watch.
A very fun movie. It's dark and lighthearted all at the same time.
Yeah, like it gets dark when it needs to get dark, and it has light moments when it needs that, you know, balance it out.
I think this was an interesting collaboration between the young director Ron Howard and Lucas as a storyteller who was still being creative.
They had been friends for years.
Well, this from American Graffiti.
This is the first time they worked together as the same level.
Yeah,
like
as,
they both
as peers.
Had directed.
Yeah.
At this point, Ron Howard had done Splash and a couple other movies.
Splash, Cocoon.
Yeah, he was pretty well known at that point. So, you know, he had had a couple hits.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I mean.
And Backtrack was just right around the corner.
Like I said, this is one of Ron Howard's best movies.
100% agree. 100%.
Well, it's like these movies are not easy to make. They're easier now than they were then. Because you can use blue screen for a lot of the crazy stuff. But, like, you know, the morphing was new.
Yep.
You know, Industrial Light and Magic had just
they invented
that,
the technology
yeah.
specifically because they didn't like the way the stop motion looked.
Right. I mean, you know, like I said before, this had the largest cast of little people in it. And it's like, that's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that's pretty awesome to have that, you know, Warwick Davis did an excellent job for this being like, I think his second movie.
Yeah.
And his first movie where he wasn't wearing a mask.
Right, right, right.
So, you know, Val Kilmer, probably one of his best performances too. And I think that because they let him ad lib.
Heat? Probably.
Yeah. Well, Heat's probably one of his best performances. But like this was
genius.
Something where it's like, you know, he hadn't been in much either.
No. Well, but I mean,
he was in Top Gun and Real Genius were like the
Real
two.
Real Genius, Top Gun. Was the spy movie?
Spy movie.
Yeah, the spy movie parody that he had done.
But I gotcha. Top Secret.
Yeah, Top Secret. Thank you. He'd been in a little bit, not a lot.
Yeah, he'd
yeah.
been in a few things, but like this was one of those.
This was
roles
his
where
breakout
like,
after
yeah.
Top Gun.
I mean, this was so. One where you know he got top billing.
Yeah,
and that and.
I mean, this was him
moving into being
a bona fide action star.
Yeah.
Got him Batman, most likely.
He was.
So, but.
The car. It was all about the car in that movie.
Well.
Chicks dig the car.
But,
I mean, it's just one of those movies where it's like, I don't have much complaints about it.
No,
the opening sequence is probably my only like ever.
It's just a little.
And you
too
know,
long.
The opening sequence is like that thing where it's like you just sit there and you still watch it.
I think going back and looking at some of the deleted scenes.
I like
scenes,
to watch the dogs.
Yeah,
the dogs like
the dogs
are really the makeup on the dogs yeah. was
and
done
the fact
really
that they
well.
Did makeup on dogs.
Yeah, like so. They put them in rubber suits and let them run.
And
all they wanted to do was play.
Could you imagine if we put Toph in a rubber suit? She'd chew her way out. You look at, you know, we were talking about some of the fantasy that came before this.
Yeah.
And like even the fantasy that came after this, outside of like Lord of the Rings and is Game of Thrones fantasy?
Yeah.
There's magic. Okay. Outside of Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones.
Chronicles
like,
of Narnia.
But like
the first two Chronicles of Narnia movies that Disney did were really well done.
Oh, I guess they didn't do the third one, did
no,
they?
No, that was 20th Century Fox, which is now part of Disney.
Yeah, right.
Damn it.
Full circle, brother. Full circle.
Who's doing it now then? Warner Brothers? I don't know.
God, I hope not. You look at like a movie like King Arthur, the one in The Legend of the Sword that just came out with Guy Ritchie.
Okay.
Like that's fantasy. And I love that movie, and it's a bad movie. Trust me, I recognize that, but I love it.
You think it's bad? I don't think it's like bad. I think it's going to be another one of those underrated type movies.
You know, like I would hope.
Well, most of Guy
40 years. People
sadly, play. Most of Guy Ritchie's movies, lately, are underrated. Yeah. Sherlock Holmes and the second one, are really good.
They're
Sherlock
both really
Holmes
good,
stories. Man from U.N.C.L.E. actually was a fun spy movie.
I just felt like they should have swapped.
They should have been.
Characters.
The roles were probably
like Armie Hammer should have been the American and Henry Cavill should have been the Russian.
But otherwise, I thought it was a really well done
especially
movie.
After Mission Impossible Fallout, he definitely should have been the other character.
Yeah, well.
Because he's an awesome assassin, bad spy, bad guy. Spy versus
spy.
Well,
he's
evil.
Not bad in Man from U.N.C.L.E.
No, I know. He was the hero.
But I mean, you know, when Guy Ritchie does movies, it's like, you know, you get what you get.
Yeah. But like, you know, fantasy's just hard to do. It's a very hard genre to do and to do well.
And it's that thing that you asked. Science fiction is easier in a way to me, thinking like, you know, I've read enough about movies that, you know, if they said do a really bad, like here, you're going to get a production team and you could do a bad sci-fi movie.
You get Event Horizon.
It's easy.
Like it's still good.
Yeah.
Like,
it's easy to do for the fact that everything's technical.
Yeah.
You can explain stuff in science fiction. Fantasy? It's magic.
I guess Harry Potter. That's another like fantasy world.
Oh, yeah.
That's
Harry Potter's
done well.
Fantasy.
Like they are done amazingly well.
Right.
But no, I mean it's hard. Like and if you look at like let's talk about Harry Potter for a second in the realm of Willow as a movie. The first couple Harry Potters
has the greatest wizard in that movie ever. Willow's hidden the whole time.
Yep.
He hid himself in that movie.
As a goblin. And then as teacher at Hogwarts. He was one of the bankers at Gringotts.
Yeah.
He played two roles.
Right, yeah.
So I think though, like you look at like what Willow did for fantasy is it made it a little more exciting and a little more accessible. And while a lot of
people wouldn't say that,
see this,
but
you don't agree?
I don't think people would say that Willow, like you could look at Willow as a film scholar.
Yeah.
I would think that film scholars probably would go, If you didn't do Willow, you might have not got those movies.
I think
if you don't
do Willow, you don't get Game of Thrones. You don't get Lord of the Rings.
You get
the
Game
way
of
they
Thrones, no matter what.
Okay, let me rephrase that. You don't get Lord of the Rings
George
the way
R.
it was
R. R.
done.
Martin inspired by Willow. I could see Peter Jackson because Peter Jackson is a fan of fantasy. Peter Jackson probably watched Willow when he was a younger man.
Yeah,
and went, I want to do something like that. And then did Dead Alive.
No, I'm not saying like Game of Thrones
have
never
happened. Have you ever
happens.
Seen Dead Alive?
I don't think I
it
have.
It is one of the greatest, goriest horror movies I've ever seen.
Oh, I probably won't like
it. Oh, it's fantastic. So, right. There's a scene in there with a lawnmower that he picks it up and uses it as a weapon. It's just off the wall.
Wait, Dead Alive. Is that the skull with the peeled off face skull on the cover?
Don't remember what the cover looked like.
Anyway,
but that was one of Peter Jackson's first movies, and it was great.
Yeah.
But I do think like Peter Jackson would have probably watched Willow and said, I want to do something like that.
Yeah, and I'm not
saying.
And like
I said, you know, maybe Peter, like, you know, it'd be a thing to, you know, does Peter Jackson have a Twitter?
Yeah, I've seen that movie.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry.
Does Peter Jackson have a Twitter?
I don't know.
I mean, if he does, I would tweet on him and be like, you know, did you go watch Willow be even filmed when it was in New Zealand?
Yeah.
Like, you know, did this inspire you
this
somewhat?
Inspire your look and feel of Lord of the
like,
Rings?
You know, did it inspire you with ideas?
But, and I don't for a second think like George R. R. Martin saw Willow and said, oh, I'm going to write Game of Thrones. Like,
George R. R. Martin was already an older man when this came out.
But I think because
he was working on Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
Not the Disney movie, the Ron Perlman TV series.
Yeah, the Ron Perlman, Linda Hamilton.
Yeah, he wrote a lot of the fantasy elements that were in the Beauty and the Beast. Linda Hamilton,
yeah. But I think, though, the one thing to consider is what this did is it opened up fantasy to be better than what it had been.
Yeah, so. I mean, you know, you look at...
Wait, is Star Wars fantasy?
No, that's science fiction.
It's got magic?
Where's it got magic at?
What's the Force?
Not magic. It's midichlorians. That's science.
Meta-what-a-words? Yeah. What?
They're still there. George Lucas put them there, so they're there.
I don't know what you're talking about. I've only seen the Topher Grace cut of the first one.
Sure you have.
God. Hey.
I watched the YouTube cut that somebody put up, and it was the actual whole trilogy.
Oh, yeah?
It wasn't just Phantom Menace. It was the whole trilogy.
In 90 minutes?
In 2.5 hours.
Okay.
And they did it, like, really well.
Oh.
They cut out a lot of the midichlorians.
You have
they
to
cut
send
out
me
a
that
lot
link.
Of Jar Jar. So I think I sent it to you at one point.
I don't remember seeing that. I would have watched that. Yeah.
2.5 hours, and most of it was Revenge of the Sith.
All right. So, Willow,
this,
man.
This movie is a well-done fantasy movie.
It is. It's a well-done
movie
in general.
It puts enough of the
Let's
romance elements in it that a fantasy story needs.
So, the interesting thing about the romance, too, is she wasn't a damsel in distress.
No, not at all.
She was the
bad guy in that movie at one point.
So, there is one thing. So, I mean, obviously, I'm a wrestling fan. We talk about this all the time. She kicks him in the nuts.
Yeah.
And he totally no-sells. Like, she, like, kind of stomps right on his groin. And then he gets up and chases after her, not like holding his groin
like
or anything. Like, it's like, hey, Val, I know she didn't actually kick you, but, like... That's gonna hurt.
I'm ad-libbing here. We're improvising. Right. Like he did.
Maybe he had a cup.
He did some of the stunts.
Yeah,
like the stunt on the cart.
Yeah,
where he falls off. He's literally being dragged on a piece of wood on the back of that.
Yeah,
and it's him. And I'm like, good for you.
I like. I always enjoy a good fantasy movie where someone throws themselves into the basket of a catapult.
Yeah,
and then cuts the line and
flies
himself.
Over.
That it's a trope I never get sick of.
So Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, stole that from this movie.
Yep.
Yeah.
Probably.
I think that you know this movie resonates with the actors that were in it because Val and Warwick still do stuff together.
Yep.
And at the show that Warwick Davis was doing for like Val shows up in that. And all tongue in cheek, but it's like, that's fun. You know, I think those two probably have kept in touch.
Was it episodes?
Something like that. I forget what it
was.
You can look it up. It's on YouTube. You can find the scenes. Just type Warwick Davis, Val Kilmer. It'll pop up.
Yeah. No, I'm very, very fond of this movie. I think it's a fun movie. It's a very good movie. It's a beautiful movie.
Every time I see Kevin Pollak, I think of this movie a little
bit. Right. Yeah. I told you, I totally forgot.
When
he
showed
that
up on Mrs.
Maisel,
I'm like,
he's not too far off.
Daikini. he is a brownie.
Yeah.
Well, and this movie like had a lot of the fantasy elements where you were like, something happened in this world before this movie.
Right.
Because the whole thing with Terlindria.
Yeah.
Like she's some kind of big magic in that world, but like she can't do anything anymore.
Right.
So it's like something bad had happened at some point in this movie. And that, I think that a prequel would have been more like, you know, thinking of George Lucas and prequels, a prequel to this would have been more interesting to see why Bav Morda had went bad and then why Tyr Azlene fell.
Yeah.
So, you know. Not that I need a sequel or a prequel to this movie. I don't.
No, I'm okay with that. Because I guess in 2005, they had talked about doing a sequel.
Well, they would have to use those books because that was George Lucas's sequel.
Yeah. Is that canon?
Well, yes, it would be considered canon.
Now it's just Legends.
Yeah. That's if Disney bought it.
It's no longer the Willow Disney expanded does own universe.
This was a Lucasfilm production, so Disney does own part of this.
So, I don't need a sequel.
Can we get some Willow Black Series figures?
Ooh, Mad Mardigan.
General Kale and Mad Mardigan 2-pack.
That would be awesome.
Because you could do Mad Mardigan like in the just clothes from his prison cell as a regular Black Series figure.
Oh,
and then the gold armor. General Kale in a two-pack.
That would be great.
San Diego exclusive Willow, General Kale, Matt Mardigan two-pack.
Yes. And then you can get the Shorsha.
Yeah.
Obviously.
There's enough. There's
obviously Willow.
I mean, you do.
Willow comes with his kids.
You
and the
do
baby.
Rule and Franchine like you did the porks.
Oh, yeah.
Here, little box.
That'd be funny. The other thing that you could do is do General Kale as the as Build-A-Figure.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be cool.
We're giving them ideas.
If you want Marvel Legends way.
So.
I seen in the trivia I was talking about the kids.
Yeah.
The kid who plays his son was 10 years younger than him.
Okay.
And the kid who played his daughter was 12 years younger than him when they shot this movie.
All right.
So they were all kids.
They were all little kids there. All right.
And I think the lady who played his wife was like 5 or 6 years older than him. So
cool.
You know, but still it was fun.
Yeah. No, it was good. It's an awesome movie. You guys should definitely watch it. All right.
Definitely have like Warwick Davis is signing autographs at
Celebration. He's the host at
Celebration. I know, but like if he's signing autographs, I hope he has Willow stuff because I'm like, I don't care about Wicked. I don't want a Willow picture signed.
Yeah. You don't want to get the little monocle wearing guy from
if I see him, I'm picking him up and putting him on my shoulders like Matt Mardigan.
Running around.
No. I would really like to meet Warwick Davis just too. Because of this movie.
Well, and he's the host of Celebration this year. So
he's been the host
multiple
years.
Okay. But I've never been.
Who's a fan? He was a fan. That's the only reason he got that job is because he like was a fan and like actually had the...
Of Star Wars?
He had the balls to go and get a role.
Good for him.
You know.
Good for him.
Yeah.
All right. Go watch Willow. Actually, the reason we did Willow, and I probably should have said
I was
going to
say you
show,
never mentioned...
it is on digital for the first time ever, so you can go to
and
iTunes.
Coming out on
Voodoo,
Blu-ray for the first time ever.
No, I have the Blu-ray.
You have the Blu-ray?
Yeah.
When did they do a Blu-ray?
Like 5 years ago.
Well, then I never seen a Blu-ray.
Yeah, I got it for free. Like one of the studios sent it to me.
Oh, okay.
So I reviewed it and everything.
I didn't know they did a Blu-ray.
It's more than 5 years ago. Anyway, but yeah.
Yeah, so. I've had a DVD the whole time.
It was a two-pack Blu-ray and DVD.
Okay.
But you can borrow the Blu-ray and watch the special features if you like.
No, they're coming out with a new one.
I know. But you know, this
is
on
the anniversary year? No, this isn't the anniversary.
It's not.
No, last year would have been.
It's out on digital for the first time ever, so you can go to Voodoo, iTunes, Google Play, wherever, and you can get it.
Or buy the new Blu-ray pack with the digital code in it.
Yeah,
sure.
Do that too. All right. Well, on that note.
And buy the soundtrack to this movie because it's like one of the best soundtracks.
You know, we hold on, before we go, we glossed over it a little bit, but like
this is one of James Horner's best soundtracks.
James Horner crushed it with this movie.
Not that James Horner didn't crush it with any movie.
But no, but he crushed
but like, this
it with this
just
movie.
Like, you know, like you said, a fantasy movie.
Yeah.
It's harder even to write a soundtrack for, I think. And like, you know, he like the action sequences, you feel
it's
like
so
you're
good.
There.
It is
and
so good.
If you just listen to the soundtrack, it's like literally I imagine the movie.
When we get done here, I'm going to the gym and I might listen to the soundtrack of this one working out.
Yeah.
So, all right. Cool guys, well, gals, everyone. Thanks for listening.
People. Cool people. My people.
Johnny's people.
Infamites.
Infaminions. I like Infaminions.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't
I just
know why.
Like people.
I like people too. Well,
people.
I don't like people. So.
Infa people. Oh, no, that's nice. There when that's half of Poland stopped listening.
I think they stopped listening when we took our hiatus.
Oh, well.
All right. Hey.
I don't care about numbers, just as long as you're enjoying the show.
Yeah, we just want you guys to love it, but also let people know you're listening and check out our shirts at Flying Pork Apparel and all that fun stuff.
Do we still have a Patreon?
Yeah, we do have a Patreon.
Oh, well, there you go.
And you guys can back us on Patreon.
Come
that on, would
be
awesome.
A patron.
Yeah, be a patron. Actually, if you back us on Patreon for long enough, you get a free shirt out of it.
Tell us what you think of Willow if you've seen Willow.
Yep.
And if you haven't seen Willow, enjoy watching it.
Yep.
Because I really like, you know, there's movies I could take apart.
Yeah.
Even movies I like, I can take apart.
And this is a hard one.
Yeah. This is one where there's not a whole lot. Like
I told you, there's some CG.
There's some really goofy moments in this where I'm like, they're forgivable.
But they pay off.
Yeah. They're forgivable because it's like. It's part of the story, actually.
There's some CG that's really bad, but it's also 1988. So, like, what do you expect? I mean, at no point is this movie is the special effects in this movie as bad as Clash of the Titans, and makes the movie borderline unwatchable.
Has great special effects. That's Ray Harryhausen.
Anyway,
you just pissed on Ray Harryhausen. There goes half our listenership. Harryhausen's great.
I know he is, but that movie's unwatchable.
The special effects in this movie aren't as bad as the CG in Jumanji
or Black Panther.
Where does that come from? Is the CG in Black Panther that bad?
Yeah, the whole scene where he's like where he fights M'Baku for the first time, and it's like the Tecmo Bowl crowd up on the mountain there.
Yeah,
that's awful looking.
Okay.
Anyway, all right.
I disagree, but okay.
The whole third act CG is like it's like a DC movie.
Wow, you really have some hate for Black Panther.
I do not have hate for it. I like the movie. It's just the CG is really bad.
You said Aquaman was better.
I might have been facetious.
You weren't facetious, but
anyway. All right, guys, we will talk to you guys next week. We'll figure out what we're talking about.
We won't, since you just like. There went all the Black Panther fans and the Harryhausen fans are leaving the room now. Bye. See you later. Bye. And on that note, later.
Later. The EFS podcast is recorded in Kings Mills, Ohio, just north of Cincinnati. You can find new episodes every Sunday on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, our website, or anywhere podcasts are downloaded. The show is hosted by Johnny Podorf and me, Brian Tudor. You can find more information about the show online at infamouspodcast.com or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as @infamouspodcast to stay up to date on the latest news about the show and what's going on in the world of comics, movies, TV, and more. We also have a Patreon page, patreon.com/infamouspodcast. We have some great rewards for our patrons, and we're looking for help to grow the show to bring you more of the content you want to hear. You can find Johnny online @JohnnyPodorf, and I'm on most social networks as @BrianTudor. Music in this episode was provided by Michael Henry from meetmichaelhenry.com. So, whenever you're listening to us, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever it is, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Later.